Welcome in, Vegas. Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Las Vegas. Ryan Wallace hanging out inside T-Mobile Arena. Chris Chapman back inside the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studios. Findlay Chevrolet on the 215. Home of the... The Vegas Golden Knights and the Vancouver Canucks. It is a big game in the Pacific Division. It's a big game for the Vegas Golden Knights. By extension, a big game for the Vancouver Canucks. Right now, the only team in the Pacific that has punched their ticket to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And the Golden Knights are looking to get there, too. It was a fantastic week for Vegas last week. Four-game road trip, 7 out of 8 possible points against teams either directly above them or directly below them in the standings. Did great work against St. Louis and Minnesota, effectively putting the Minnesota Wild to bed. And, you know, a lot of that is the Vegas Golden Knights. Some of that is John Hines and pulling his goaltender in overtime and essentially setting the table for Jonathan Marchessault to score his 40th goal with an overtime empty net goal, something you don't see very often in the National Hockey League. And now the Golden Knights come home for just one game. Then it's a three-game road trip for Vegas before returning home for the final four games at home. That's what the outlook is over the final 2 weeks or so of the regular season. And as we sit right now with the Golden Knights, we're just going to pull up the standings and give everybody a check as to where Vegas is and the difference a week can make in the National Hockey League down the stretch. Before the Golden Knights went on the road for a back-to-back St. Louis-Nashville and then Winnipeg and Minnesota, a four-game stretch in just about 5.5-6 days, a grueling schedule, the Golden Knights were in the second wildcard spot. The wins needed to be there, not for the Golden Knights to, you know, feel necessarily comfortable with where they were, but just to keep hold of that wild card spot. But the Golden Knights go out there. They take 7 out of 8 points. The Los Angeles Kings struggle mightily over their last couple of games. And now we wake up with 2 weeks to go, and the Golden Knights are firmly in third place in the Pacific Division, 90 points in 74 games. LA, 87 points in 74 games. So the Kings, 3 points back of Vegas by virtue of the Golden Knights absolutely performing to their potential on that four-game road trip. Chris Chapman, I'm going to bring you in here. We talked about it more so off-air than on-air, about how that four-game road trip for the Golden Knights was essentially going to give you an idea of what their season was going to be. The outlook of the season really did hang in the balance there. And players aren't necessarily going to agree with that, but you play to the end of the season, you have 8 games remaining, you can still make up room or space if you faltered on that four-game road trip. But with the season more or less on the line in terms of comfort down the stretch, the Golden Knights performed, and they performed in a massive way.
Well, yeah, I mean, I asked Jack Eichel before they hit the road if it was a season-defining week for them or road trip, and he basically said, no, it's not, but it is a very important week.
Yeah.
I think it was a defining week for the Golden Knights because they went on the road. They beat a couple of playoff teams in Winnipeg and a team that was fighting for a playoff spot in St. Louis, who's still technically still alive. They beat Minnesota, ending basically their chance at making a playoffs. I think I heard Shane Knighty and Dave Gosher talking about it yesterday. It was like 2% now that they would make the playoffs.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So like they're done. And then you got the point against Nashville, who at the time was the hottest team in the NHL. So while maybe not season-defining, it was defining in the regard that it let the world and let the rest of the league know the Golden Knights have found their game.
Yeah, I think that's where it really comes in, right? The Golden Knights got the results on this road trip, but it wasn't really a road trip in which you look at the games after the fact and say, okay, the Golden Knights were lucky to win. They had some issues, but they found ways or they made a play here or there. They were very, very good throughout the majority of that road trip. Third period in Nashville, not their strongest third period. However, I'd argue it was better than a lot of people think it was. The Predators just finished their chances. By and large, if you look at how the Golden Knights defended, if you looked at how they were playing in those tight games against St. Louis, against Winnipeg, against Minnesota, the Golden Knights were the better team for far longer stretches in all four of those games. And that, to me, is the biggest calling card for this team. When they are playing to their level of expectation and they are playing to their identity and they have the defensive side of the puck dialed in, they're going to win games because of the process. And that's what we saw on this road trip.
Yeah, I mean, look, they defensively were as good as they've been all season.
Yeah.
And I would argue that the goaltending they got was pretty much the best goaltending that they got all season. And I'll even put the first two periods of Yuri Patera against Nashville. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was lights out. He was really good in those first two periods. And unfortunately, you know, things kind of fell apart, not just for him, but for everyone else in that third period in at Bridgestone Arena. But, Ryan, I think the key to me was they did a lot of this without Alex Pietrangelo.
Yeah.
Which makes me think, wait a minute, not only have these guys found their game, but there's more to come.
Well, I'm with you there, and so often when we talk about team defense, we're only focused on the defensemen. It's a full team stat, right? Like,
right.
You need your forwards tracking back. You need them reloading in the neutral zone. You need them committed to forechecking and dumping pucks in if there's no play to be made so that they're not turning pucks over and putting their defense in a bad spot. You are trusting in all five guys to be playing as a unit. And I think you look at things in different ways, right? Obviously, doing this without Alex Pietrangelo for the majority, that's huge for the Golden Knights because Pietrangelo did come back against the Minnesota Wild. We expect him to go again tonight for the Golden Knights. No real reason as to why he wouldn't be able to do that. And now the Golden Knights have the ability to play Hanifin away from Pietrangelo, to play Theodore away from Hanifin and Pietrangelo, and you've got a difference maker on the blue line on all three of your pairs. And it also frees you up in scenarios to go with a pair of Hanifin and Pietrangelo if you're trying to shut things down, or a pair of Hanifin and Theodore if you're trying to get a little bit more offense. But really, what it coincides for me is the Golden Knights getting healthier up front. The Golden Knights getting all four of their center icemen generally back and healthy. When this team is able to go Jack Eichel, Chandler Stephenson, William Karlsson, Nick Waugh, or some approximation of that, throw Brett Howden into the mix, when they've got all four of their centers healthy, this team is really hard to beat because everything is dialed in as far as a five-man unit goes.
Yeah, I mean, look, they are where they want to be. I think as far as the center position goes, we know they're still going to get a couple forwards back. As the season progresses, we know Tomas Hertl not too far away.
We'll get into that in just a second.
You know, yeah. But I think what we also saw was how versatile and how important Brett Howden is to this roster, the way it's made up, because Brett can play in a variety of positions.
Yeah.
And he can be good. He can deliver in different positions because he's your fifth center. And you know, at least right now. So, you know, the thing is, you have so much depth at that position that you're forcing a guy like Brett Howden, who I think would probably be a fourth line center on almost every team in the league. You're moving him out to the wing, and he's still able to contribute out on the wing. And I think he's a guy who we kind of, I don't want to say we don't talk about a lot because we do, but I still don't think he gets the credit that maybe he deserves. Mm-hmm. Because there's glue guys, and Brett Howden, to me, is a glue guy. He strikes me as a guy who's very likable, a guy who's very popular in the locker room, but he's a guy who quietly just goes out there and plays his game. And what I like about Brett's game is every once in a while, he delivers a big hit. And you're kind of like, wow, I forgot that Brett Howden had that in his game.
So you talk about versatility with Howden. He was a winger on the second line of a team that won the Stanley Cup. Right?
Yeah.
You go back to the Golden Knights in Game 5 and throughout the majority of the playoffs, that second line was Brett Howden, Chandler Stephenson, and Mark Stone. He found a home as a guy that could finish plays, go to the net, open up time and space for Stone and Stephenson to work and do their thing, and that was the role that fit him the best. This year, because of injuries, because of all the flux that the Golden Knights have had in terms of their lineup night in and night out, he is most productively been on the fourth line, either down the middle or on the wing. He gives you that secondary center option on your fourth line, and really, he's found that fit there. Now, as you mentioned, Tomáš Hertl is moving in the right direction. For those that don't know, Hertl yesterday skated for the first time with the Golden Knights in a red non-contact jersey. Today, Tomáš Hertl on the ice for morning skate in a regular sweater. That's great news. Bruce Cassidy, we're going to get to his audio in hour number two. He wouldn't rule Tomáš Hertl in or out for Friday's game in Arizona against the Coyotes. So that's pretty important news for the Golden Knights, because if Hertl is able to go on Friday, then that gives Bruce Cassidy 7 games to work with and experiment when it comes to Tomáš Hertl, where he's going to fit best. We'll dive into that a little bit more in hour number two, where we feel Tomáš Hertl will start and where we feel he's going to end up for the Golden Knights, and then how much of an impact we're expecting Tomáš Hertl to make on this team. But with Hertl coming in for a guy like Brett Howden, this is going to be important hockey down the stretch, because you don't want to lose your spot, right? And we know Will Carrier's out with an injury. He's day-to-day. When he might be back, that remains to be seen. So you're going to have healthy players that have been important players for this team all season long, and you're going to have difficult decisions. Just like Bruce has to do right now with his 8 healthy defensemen, we're going to get to a point in this season or in the playoffs where the Golden Knights have 14, 15 healthy forwards, and you've got to assemble the 12 best guys that give you a chance to win on a daily basis. And it seems inconceivable, based on how this season has gone with injuries, that the Golden Knights might be in that position, but they're going to be in that position, Chapman, and that's the best possible position to be in going into the postseason.
Yeah, I could say without any doubt that I would not want to be in the position to have to make those decisions and to have to tell guys who've been playing good all season that, hey, I know these are the most important games that we've played all year, but, you know, we just have to go in a different direction right now. It's not an enviable position from that aspect, but it's a very enviable position from the aspect of this team has so much depth right now. Mm-hmm. Like, if you really want to get technical, you've got some guys down in Henderson who probably could play on some NHL rosters as well. And, you know, they're completely out of the mix, barring something crazy. So it's a really good position to have to take guys out of the lineup that have played well for you, because you have to insert guys in the lineup who are potential all-stars.
So that brings me to tonight's game. The Vegas Golden Knights, the Vancouver Canucks. Vancouver, 100 points. They lead the Pacific Division. 10 points up on the Vegas Golden Knights. 8 games left for Vancouver, 8 games left for Vegas. The Golden Knights will play Vancouver one more time after today. And then you've got the Edmonton Oilers, 95 points with a game in hand on both Vegas and Vancouver. This one's big. Not just for the Golden Knights, but I think also for the Vancouver Canucks. They have not gone as well as they have throughout the majority of the season. They're 4-3-1 in their last 8 games. And why did I choose an 8-game sample size? Well, that's how many games they've played without Thatcher Demko. Right? When you talk about goaltenders and the importance that they have for their team, I look at Thatcher Demko, and he's the poster child in a lot of ways for as far as Thatcher Demko will take you. That's as far as the Vancouver Canucks will go, and I think it's in a lot of ways mirroring their results without him as the guy.
Yeah, they've kind of struggled a little bit without him. I mean, the thing is, it's not like Casey DeSmith has played bad.
No,
like he's been pretty solid in net. I mean, he's a good backup, but I don't know if this team is tired. I don't know if there's a distraction, but you know, I think. For them, they're probably not playing their best hockey at the time you want to be playing your best hockey. But I will say this, with a win on their end tonight, you probably bury the Golden Knights into that 2-3 matchup. And you basically eliminate them from having any shot, I think, to win the division.
Yeah.
So it's a huge, huge game for them, much in the way it was for the Golden Knights to bury the Minnesota Wild. I mean, the good aspect for the Golden Knights is you're going to make the playoffs. So where you finish is completely irrelevant for these guys. But I think for the psyche of the Canucks, to be able to come in here tonight, and if they win, that would be two times that they would have beaten the Golden Knights in the last few weeks at T-Mobile.
Yeah.
So it's an important game for them, just from the mental aspect of, hey, you know what? We can beat these guys, and if we play them in the playoffs, we'll have our number one guy in net. We're not afraid of them.
So just to kind of paint the picture, the Golden Knights, if they win out, they'll top out at 106 points. As I just mentioned with the Vancouver Canucks, they've got 100 points so far on the season, and they've got 8 games remaining, 2 of which are against the Vegas Golden Knights. If Vancouver wins today, then the Golden Knights can top out at 104 points. The Vancouver Canucks would have 102. They would literally need 3 points over their final 7 games to lock up home ice advantage over the Golden Knights. Whether they are a 1 seed or a 2 seed, it would all but lock up home ice advantage for Vancouver in terms of where they finish in the regular season. I'm still not discounting the fact that the Edmonton Oilers can leapfrog Vancouver. I think that it's there for the taking for Edmonton. And I think we're more and more kind of finding now that the Golden Knights are either going to play Vancouver or Edmonton, right? The question is, do they have a better chance of getting home ice advantage against the Oilers than they do the Canucks? I'm not sure. It's there. It's available. Like, Vegas can beat Vancouver today, and then they can beat Vancouver in Vancouver on the 8th. Then all of a sudden, you know, who knows whether or not the Golden Knights can kind of catch them. But a win in regulation today for Vancouver essentially locks up home ice advantage for them. Whether they finish 1 or 2, it's more or less in the cards for them at that point.
Yeah, I mean, look, they for Vegas, you know, you control your own destiny in terms of making the playoffs. No matter what happens tonight, you don't control your destiny as far as where you're seated in those playoffs. So I think for Vegas, it's an important game because you want to keep pressure on the Edmonton Oilers to keep having to play well as on their end as well. But look, I don't think Vegas is intimidated by anybody. I don't think they really care who they play. That being said, I think there's obviously things that they would prefer, and you would prefer to have home ice advantage in the playoffs as opposed to having to start on the road. But there's an advantage to that as well, because if you start on the road and you win that first game, all of a sudden home ice advantage means absolutely nothing.
Well, the way that I look at it from a Golden Knights perspective, we just saw them go 3-0-1 on a 4-game road trip that was really difficult.
Right.
They have beaten Vancouver in Vancouver already this season. And it wasn't a close game by any stretch. The Golden Knights shut the neutral zone down against the Vancouver Canucks, and they had no answer. No answer. So when the Golden Knights are reloading in the neutral zone, when they're committed to forechecking well, and when they are connected as a five-man unit in terms of their breakouts, their decision-making is solid and clean, they can shut down what the Vancouver Canucks do well. This is a team in Vancouver that is built on transition. And if there's one thing that we've talked about of late with the Golden Knights in terms of how they're defending, you go back to the New Jersey game. There weren't very many odd man rushes. You go back to the Seattle game, not very many odd man rushes. The Golden Knights are doing a really good job of shutting things down through the neutral zone. And even though Vancouver can extend offensive zone time, they're not really a team that's going to create from, you know, below the circles, below the goal line, and score that way. Where they really, really break teams down is they'll have that extended zone time, and then they will strike on a reload. They will strike on a team where the decision-making coming out of your own zone is poor because you spent 35, 45 seconds defending, and then it is just a quick transition play to catch some guys as they're going off for a line change. That's really where the Vancouver Canucks feast on teams when they are playing to their identity.
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly, you look at their personnel, and it would make sense. I mean, they have guys that can get up and down the ice. They've got guys who could score a lot of goals and sometimes like to go out and score for fun. So the way you beat them is pretty much how you just described it, right? And I think the Golden Knights also have the edge in physicality. Mm-hmm. Look, Vancouver, good team, but not a very physical team. And I think that's an area where Vegas can, especially if they were to see these guys in the playoffs, where they could really play their game. I mean, We know Will Carrier is not going to play tonight, but in the playoffs, he's a guy who you expect to go out there and lay some wood. Brady McNabb, We saw him deliver a couple big hits on the road trip. So certainly he's a guy you keep an eye on as well. We talk about it all the time, how the physicality ramps up in the playoffs. And certainly, I think if you're Vegas, the idea of playing Vancouver in the first round as opposed to L.A. or Edmonton, where you're going to get a much more physical and you're probably going to get six or seven games of that, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world for the Golden Knights to finish in a position where they play the Vancouver Canucks.
I think physicality is certainly an aspect where the Golden Knights can push Vancouver around. And to be honest, like if we're looking at the Vancouver Canucks when it comes to why people don't necessarily buy them in the playoffs, it's because of that physicality. Can Quinn Hughes hold up in a seven-game series against a team like Vegas, against a team like Nashville, who really, really lays the body well, right? Like, there's a certain level in which the physicality goes up in the postseason. You're not going to take a shift off. You're not going to turn down a hit. Every single opportunity you have to hit a guy like Quinn Hughes or Filip Hronek, you're going to take. And can that cumulative effect wear a team like Vancouver down over seven games? I'd argue yes, because we've seen it happen before.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, because this is a team that I think a lot of people might look at as a much more finesse team. I mean, you look at guys like Elias Pettersson. I mean, there's really not a lot of physicality in his game. JT Miller, he's got a little bit, but not anything where you're going to be like, oh, well, I mean, he's certainly not sending shivers down anyone's spine. I think the Quinn Hughes aspect is a little, you know, something that's really important too, because you're going to take that extra hit in the playoffs. And you have a team that's really never been there before. I know they were there in the bubble, but that's the only time they've made the playoffs in like, I think, a decade. So much different aspect. And so I think you have the inexperience factor. You've got guys who don't play that physical brand of hockey. And I know Rick Tocchet is a really good coach. And I think, you know, he kind of can balance that out a little bit, because I think he's really good at getting the best out of his players. But I don't know how much of a difference Rick Tocchet makes in a series against the Golden Knights or the Edmonton Oilers or the LA Kings. Because I think regardless of who's on the bench on the other side, those teams are much more physical. And I don't know how much the coaching edge kind of counterbalances the physicality edge.
I wonder about the blue line of the Vancouver Canucks. I wonder about going through a seven-game series where, generally speaking, in the regular season, you lay off on certain hits, right? Like, you're not going to go 110% every single night. When you're seeing a different team every night, when the forechecks are different every night, when you face physical teams one night, not physical teams another night, like, if you're going back and every single time you are faced with Will Carrier or Brett Howden or a Paul Cotter or an Ivan Barbashev, how much of a toll is that going to take? How fresh are you going to be over the course of a seven-game series? That's the big question mark for me when it comes to Vancouver. Can their defense hold up to the physical rigors of a postseason matchup against a defending Stanley Cup champion in Vegas, or, you know, an LA team or a Nashville team, whatever it might be, that plays on that edge and uses that physicality to their advantage?
Yeah, I mean, the only one you look at on their blue line who really, I think, is a guy who you know has kind of been through it a little bit is
Nikita Zadorov.
Well, I was going to say Ian Cole. You know, I mean, he won a Stanley.
I mean, from a physicality standpoint, it's Zadorov. Right?
Yes,
like,
yeah.
He was brought in to be that
to
guy.
But I was going to say Cole has the experience of going the distance in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So, but yeah, Zadorov, and listen, he's no slouch. I mean, he's a guy who certainly brings it, but I don't know how much I don't know if he makes up for the lack of that type of game from the other guys that they have on their line. I mean, certainly Carson Soucy, not really a guy who sends shivers down your spine. You mentioned Hronek and Hughes. Tyler Myers, maybe a little bit, but they don't really have that guy other than Zadorov. The Golden Knights, you look at some of the physical players that they have on their team, and they've got that. Now at the forward position, I do think Mikheyev, he's not really a guy who shies away from the hits, but I don't really think that they have, like, they don't have a guy where when you're lining up, you're like, oh, that guy scares me, or oh, I need to pay attention to where that guy's at on the ice.
No, I think JT Miller and Connor Garland are probably the two most physical players.
And Garland's a little guy.
Like, well, there's physicality, and then there's physicality that matters in the postseason.
Yes.
I don't know that Connor Garland has that, but you know, the point that I'm trying to make is, regardless of where things fall, the Vancouver Canucks are going to need to prove that they can win in the postseason. The Golden Knights don't need to prove it. They've done it.
They
right?
just got to go out and do it.
And that's the beauty of, okay, if you start as a 3 seed, you start on the road, it doesn't really matter. Like, with Vegas, they've worked themselves into this position where they are in control of their own destiny, not just in terms of making the playoffs, but in terms of finishing in that 3 spot, guaranteeing that you're going through the Pacific Division, guaranteeing that you're going to have either Vancouver or Edmonton. You beat Edmonton last year. It's not going to be easy, but you can do it again, especially as you get healthier. Or you have Vancouver, a team that is new to all of this, and their reward is having to go through the defending Stanley Cup champions in the first round. It works out well for Vegas just based on what they've done before, how nothing phases this team. A 5-minute major to Jack Eichel doesn't faze them. Killing off that major penalty doesn't faze them. Having the goaltender pulled in overtime doesn't faze them. This team deals with adversity better than any other team in the National Hockey League. They've done it for a long time, and that's why you should believe in the Golden Knights, that they can do really anything once the postseason starts, because they've done it before and they're getting closer and closer to that team that they were last year. Let's take a break now. We're up against it. We got Danny Webster, Las Vegas Review Journal. He's going to join us on the other side to talk a little bit more about this game, Vegas and Vancouver, and ultimately where the best matchups lie for the Golden Knights as we look ahead to the postseason. All that's next on the VGK Insider Show. VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Tuesday. The Golden Knights set to take on the Vancouver Canucks just after 7 o'clock. A big game in the Pacific Division. A big game, obviously, for Vancouver, as it is for the Vegas Golden Knights, who are still trying to lock up a playoff berth themselves. And joining us now to talk a bit about Vegas and Vancouver, as well as some bigger picture things with the Golden Knights, we bring in Danny Webster of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Hey, Danny, how you doing?
Doing well. How y'all doing?
Fantastic. So, Vegas, Vancouver, how big of a game is this in your eyes?
I think it's big from both sides. I think when you look at Vancouver, they've obviously kind of been up and down since Thatcher Demko went down, and I think they've been really looking for that signature win that they can hang their hat on, saying that they are much more of a team than just their superstar goaltender. And for the Golden Knights, I think it's just the fact that you want to keep the momentum going after such a successful road trip, and now it's points in 6 straight, if they're able to go into tonight and go into this 3-game road trip upcoming with a win over the team that they're still chasing with slim chances to win another division title, I can't imagine how monumental those proportions would be as far as that goes.
Okay, so when it comes to Vancouver, like you mentioned it, right? They've been inconsistent, up and down, since Thatcher Demko went down. They're 4-3-1 in their last 8 games. Still good, but not really what they've been all season long. The question mark for me when it comes to Vancouver is their blue line and how their blue line will hold up over a more physical brand of hockey in the postseason and a 7-game series. Is that kind of where you lean or where you fall on the Vancouver Canucks?
I am heading on that side, but I think it's also worth noting just how pretty good they've been defensively since Demko went down, obviously going 4-4, playing 500 hockey over the last little bit here, is good. Obviously not great, but not terrible either. But I think the number was 2.3 goals allowed in those 8 games, and that's even with Thatcher Demko out, and they've been able to rotate between Casey DeSmith, and I believe tonight he's going for the 8th time in 9 games, so they're definitely going to use him as much as they can. But I do think that Bruce Cassidy said it this morning when talking about Vancouver and just their commitment to playing well on the blue line, when Rick Tocchet was hired, that was the area of emphasis that he wanted to tackle. And so far, they've been able to do that. They've been able to transition defense into really good offense. We know of how good Vancouver has had high-end offensive talent for years. But now the fact that they're putting it together and getting quality play, not just offensively from the blue line, but also on the back end, it's really paid off for them to the point now where they're closing in on that division title. But all in all, when they get into the playoffs, it is going to come down to how well they play in the blue line, how physical they can be in that area, and how well that can translate over a seven-game series.
You know, it's kind of funny because you brought up the changes with this team and most of it on the bench, but is Rick Tocchet really the only thing that, or the difference in what we've seen from the Canucks this year and the perennial underachievers that we'd seen in years past? Because I thought Travis Green and Bruce Boudreau both did admirable jobs, but for some reason the team was never able to take the next step, whereas they've been able to do that this year under Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, you look at Travis Green, obviously they did a really tremendous job in the bubble getting to the second round and taking the Golden Knights all the way to seven games. And you really thought going into the next year, going into even into the All-Canada year with the pandemic and even coming back out of it in 22, that they were going to be able to kind of ride that wave of momentum, and it just never clicked. And they had that little stretch after they hired Bruce Boudreau, and it just never clicked fully after that. I think Rick Tocchet is just someone who kind of checks all those boxes as far as commitment to defensive style hockey, getting the best out of special teams, which was, of course, his calling card when he was an assistant in Pittsburgh. And you put all of that together, and it checks off the little boxes that where you know Vancouver has that talent, you know they're capable of getting to the playoffs, but that extra gear, that extra one little area that they've needed to fix for all these years, they're finally doing it. They're putting more emphasis on the defensive side, and it's translating well going at the offside. You're not going to win like a 1-0, 2-1 game every night against the Canucks, but they're going to make you work for those goals, and as long as you can make them work for theirs, you know you're getting the same level of hard work from that group as you would any other team. So I do think it has a lot to do with just the personality and the kind of coach that Rick Tocchet is.
Danny Webster, Las Vegas Review-Journal, joining us here on the VGK Insider Show to dig a little bit deeper into Vegas and Vancouver. That game goes just about 7:08 tonight. Pre-game show will start at 6 p.m. with me. I preempt myself. I love doing that. All right, Danny, when you look at the Golden Knights recently, you can go one of two ways, right? Like, you can talk about how well they've defended, their structure, kind of getting back to that identity. And then you can look at Logan Thompson, how well he has played in his last five starts and making big saves, timely saves at key moments. Like, where do you kind of view that in terms of the importance, right? Is it Logan Thompson has instilled confidence in the defense? Is it the defense has allowed Logan Thompson to play a more confident brand of hockey? Where do you fall on that kind of continuum there?
I hate hedging my bets, but I definitely do think that there are definitely valid arguments to both sides. I think when you look at the way Logan Thompson has played, they've needed that goaltending for the last 3-4 weeks now. They've needed somebody, whether it be him or Aiden Hill or Yuri Patera, to come in and kind of stabilize that position however they may see fit. And, you know, whether it be just making timely saves or maybe it hitting off a post or two, it kind of sets off that seismic effect of getting the results you need at the right time. And I do think that there is structure to how well Logan Thompson has played and has translated over. On the flip side of that, defensively, it's been obviously a wild up and down roller coaster defensively for the Golden Knights. But I think you look back at this, you know, even going back to what, 8-2-1 in their last 11, and you look at it from the standpoint of just the high danger chances, they're limiting those. I think they're averaging 7 more per game than what the opposition has had. Scoring chances, I think, is about 8 or 9 more than the opposition. They are limiting those defensively as well. So the fact that they have been able to be more physical below the goal line, be more physical in those areas that where they really weren't at stretches throughout this year, I think that has definitely lended into giving Logan Thompson confidence that he can go in and win these games. But it also lends to the fact that if he continues to win and the Golden Knights continue to play well, it's going to be very difficult to take him out of the starter's crease when the Golden Knights inch closer to the playoffs, even if Aiden Hill does come back before the end of April 18th.
That's an interesting one. We're going to put a pin on that for just a moment. When it comes to Logan, we're not goalie experts here. We're not goalie coaches in the National Hockey League, but is there an observable difference to you in how he's playing?
I think it's just the fact, and I kind of chatted with him about this off the recorder the other day, just asking kind of just more so his technique. And one of the things that he mentioned was that he's not playing so far out of his post. He's more so just sticking to both ends of the crease, not being overly aggressive, sticking to his paint and not drifting off too far and making the ridiculous plays that maybe you would have seen him try to make earlier this year. He doesn't need to make every single big-time save to keep the puck out of the net. As long as he plays a safe and sound game in his crease, it's going to eventually translate to other aspects of his game. And I think the fact that he's kind of calmed himself down a little bit and is not really focused on trying to make every single play that needs to be made in that zone, I think it's kind of translated very well, and he's made the smart plays at the right time, and it's reflected in his play.
You know, Bruce Cassidy is going to have some difficult decisions to make in the very near future. Obviously, Tomas Hertl getting much closer to joining the team. We know William Carrier's day-to-day. Where do you see this team going as far as the forward position when he has Tomas Hertl and William Carrier back in the line? Because I don't know who you pull out. Like, I mean, it's a legitimate problem, but it's a good problem. So where do you see some of these guys fitting when they are fully healthy?
Well, I'll tell you, I've spent more time trying to figure out how you're going to rotate the 8 defensemen they have. Now you're asking me to rotate 16 forwards. I mean, that is the potential of 16 forwards. That's the real big question here, because now we're looking at the possibility of Tomas Hertl, now that he's full contact, and the likelihood, I'm not saying it's a guarantee and Bruce wouldn't commit to that today, but the likelihood that he goes on this trip, he makes his Golden Knights debut potentially this week when they travel to Arizona. So let's just put it that hypothetical. Bruce said he wants to start out on the wing, so that's more so probably going to be on the left-hand side. So now you're moving down, say, a Brett Howden or a Paul Cotter, and Paul Cotter is currently occupying that second-line left wing going into tonight. So right now you make me look at Paul Cotter coming out. Now you look at Brett Howden, and he's played very well. I think Brett Howden's probably been one of the more undervalued players during this stretch. Whether he's playing on the second line or whether he's playing on the fourth line, his role has not changed, and he has played really good hockey. So now you're coming to the decision of, do you take Brett Howden out and take out that consistency for William Carrier because you know what you're getting on that line, or do you take William Carrier out? So there's a lot of intricacies going into that. And then we have to, and I know a lot of people are going to lose their mind over this, but now you got to think about the possibility of Mark Stone coming back down the line. So then that's another forward that you have to take out of the lineup, and you have to figure out how you're going to finagle that as well. So I think right now it looks like a race between possibly Cotter, Carrier, and Howden, and then whoever else could play the fourth winger role as far as taking him out if Mark Stone does come back. So there's a lot of pieces to handle, and I know Bruce has talked about that this is a great problem to have. I can only imagine it's got to be as gigantic of a headache as it is for him, as it is for anybody else trying to play armchair GM and armchair coach trying to figure this out.
Well, that's the importance of, you know, six or seven games for Tomas Hertl, right? Like, you've got to try to figure out where the fit is best, and then you can kind of backfill your different line combinations from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact that he wants to start him out as wing, and Bruce mentioned that he's not going to – being on the wing is not where he's going to end up, so I think that's important to note as well. But the fact that he's able to play both positions, I think, does help in the fact that you can analyze what combinations work best in these final six games. And I do also think it might not seem like a giant observance here, but the fact that I think that they finished the season with 4 games at home, and you're having that ability to kind of stay at home, not have to worry about travel, you can kind of iron out those details, you know, day by day as you get to those final 8 days of the regular season. And I think by the time you get to maybe the second or third last game, you're going to have an idea of where Tomas Hertl is going to go in the lineup, and then you can best subtract who comes out of the lineup from there.
Do you mess around with the idea of not necessarily Hertl alongside Jack Eichel, but you know, maybe you go with this combination of Stevenson, Eichel, Marchessault, and then maybe you go with Barbashev, Hertl, and then insert player on the right wing, whether it's Michael Amadio. I'm cautious to kind of pull Anthony Mantha away from William Karlsson, but do you get the sense that maybe Bruce will look at breaking up the top line just to see if there's a combination there that works a little bit better?
Maybe, yeah. I haven't really thought of it from that standpoint. If you want to go with like an all-bruiser type
yes.
wing of lineup with Barbashev and Hertl, especially this time of year, I don't think that's really a bad idea. I agree with you 100%. I don't think pulling Anthony Mantha away from William Karlsson and Pablo Dorfeev right now would be I think that line has been very good. Mantha has found his groove with Karlsson. And I think that for right now, until further notice, you keep that trio together. I ultimately think that maybe when the time comes, you want to experiment a little bit with that top six. And I do think that's a good look to have maybe Hertl and Barbashev together and whoever you want as the center, whether it be Stevenson, maybe a Howden if it works out for that area. But I also caution the idea of moving around the top line just because Barbashev, Eichel, and Marchessault have just been so good. We know what those three can produce. Mm-hmm. And so I think the fact that you're going to have these games to kind of figure that out is a good idea. Mm-hmm. But I am interested to see how that second line looks going forward. Just thinking about how Bruce thinks whatever three is going to go on that second line and how he plans that out.
Okay, this is the last one. It's an impossible question to answer when you really dig into it a little bit more. Who's having the better season for the Vegas Golden Knights? Is it Jonathan Marchessault or William Karlsson?
Oof. gosh, man. That, I think from the totality impact of it,
mm-hmm.
I would say Karlsson, but at the same time, when you're talking clutch factor and you're talking about a guy who just hit 40 goals,
mm-hmm.
like, how can you not say Jonathan Marchessault? That is a very tough question. And I think it benefits the fact that I think he's on the top line and Karlsson is, you know, on a third line role and he's playing as well as he is. But, mm-hmm. man, that's tough. I think ultimately just the totality of it and the fact that he's been so good and putting up 50 points, I would give the slight edge to William Karlsson, even though Jonathan Marchessault said you would never catch him on a 4-on-3 penalty kill ever again, and that's how he scored his 40th goal. But I digress. I would still think right now the edge would go to Karlsson just where he is in the lineup.
That's interesting because I tend to kind of skew that way too when it comes to overall play. But I think on the surface, you're going to go with the guy that's scoring 40 goals. But William Karlsson has been invaluable to the Golden Knights, so that's an interesting way of looking at it. Danny, we appreciate you jumping on, taking the time. Get down here, enjoy the game, and you and I will chat soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
That is Danny Webster with the Las Vegas Review-Journal joining us here to set up Vegas and Vancouver and answer impossible questions to answer. Someone's going to get mad at him. All right, we'll take a break, come back with more on the VGK Insider Show. Rolling along here on a game day, the Golden Knights, the Vancouver Canucks. That's coming up in just a couple of hours. Chris Chapman, Ryan Wallace hanging out with you. We've got one-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. That'll be in hour number two, as well as Bruce Cassidy's audio from earlier today. As we mentioned, updates on Tomas Hertl, the Vancouver Canucks, why they have been such an improved team this year. We'll dig into that with Bruce Cassidy. We'll also find out if Chris Chapman feels, like Danny Webster does, that William Karlsson's season might be better on the whole, in totality, than Jonathan Marchessault's season. We'll also dig into where we think Tomas Hertl fits best. All that is coming up in hour number two of the VGK Insider Show.